From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to Capitol Connection. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, talking about the issues that matter most, family, freedom, and life, and how they intersect with culture and government. And on today's show, we're talking a lot about religious freedom. And we're going to have a special guest, a national policy expert from the Family Research Council, Travis Weber, who will be joining us shortly to give us some updates and analysis on some big developments on this issue and what it means for religious liberty in our country moving forward. And this is absolutely a fundamental issue. This is a key area that we work on at Nebraska Family Alliance, safeguarding religious freedom for all citizens, because we believe that Christians, like all Americans, have a vital and irreplaceable role to play in influencing our government. The importance of Christians influencing government for good and protecting religious freedom is a theme that runs throughout the entire Bible. But oftentimes, people didn't have any ability to influence government other than to pray for a leader who would let them practice their faith in peace. Today, however, we can influence government and affect it for good when government seeks to interfere with our inalienable rights or attempt to pass unjust laws. The opportunity to help select the kind of government we have is a stewardship that God entrusts to citizens in a democracy. This is a stewardship that we cannot neglect or fail to appreciate. In fact, we are living today with freedoms that most people throughout human history have never known, including the freedom to worship God according to our own conscience 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, or to not worship at all and to not be forced to follow a government-mandated orthodoxy. This is something we have an obligation to protect, not only for ourselves, but for all citizens and future generations. This starts with protecting religious liberty. We have to be on watch. And this is a hot-button issue that continues to draw out intense debate because we continue to see a direct, intentional assault on religious freedom through legislation that is introduced in Congress and here in Nebraska. But there have been some significant positive developments at the national level with big implications for religious freedom that we're going to talk about today. Recently, the United States Supreme Court came down with a major decision in favor of religious freedom by ruling that a World War I veterans memorial in the shape of a 40-foot cross that has stood for nearly 100 years can remain on public land in Maryland after an atheist group sought its removal. This decision has serious implications for religious liberty and has created a lot of discussion across the country. We're excited to have with us today to talk about this case and what it means for religious liberty in the United States, Travis Weber, the Vice President for Policy and Director of the Center for Religious Liberty at Family Research Council. Travis, thanks so much for your work out in our nation's capital. It's great to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me on.
So, Travis, I understand you actually co-authored an amicus brief in this case that went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. So before we get into some of the specifics and implications from this ruling, tell us, what was the actual question before the Supreme Court and what was at stake with this case?
The question before the court was whether a cross-shaped memorial that's been around for nearly 100 years violates the Establishment Clause of the Constitution, that part of the First Amendment that prohibits the government from establishing or setting up a religion. The court answered that question, obviously, in the negative, saying the cross, this memorial does not violate that part of the First Amendment. You know, this is obviously the simple question at the heart of the case, but there are a lot of implications to the ruling, different parts of the ruling, and we highlighted some different aspects of this question and the implications for it in our amicus brief.
So we got the decision, and the Supreme Court ruled 7-2 in favor of allowing this Peace Cross Memorial to remain on public land. What was your reaction when the decision came down, and what did you take away from the majority opinion as especially important?
Yeah, so obviously we're pleased with the result. We have a 7-2 ruling, or 7-2 decision. saying that the cross does not violate the Establishment Clause and can stay. Now, the way that broke out with different members of the court writing concurring opinions, joining different parts of different opinions, it's a lot more complicated. I think the result itself was expected. The question was how broad the court was going to go in clarifying the rather murky Establishment Clause jurisprudence on the books right now. And they went further than the result itself. I mean, so there were some positive concurring opinions, positive aspects to this opinion breakdown that I would say were more positive than the vote itself. But they held short of fully clarifying and overhauling the Establishment Clause jurisprudence as a whole. So it was positive, but we have work to do, and there's movement that needs to be made in the years to come.
It was interesting to see just the different concurring opinions and all the different reasoning that was used by the different justices to reach their conclusion. So, Travis, are there broader implications at play here that you alluded to? What does this decision mean for religious liberty in the United States moving forward?
Yeah, I think it's positive for the role of religious symbols and religious displays in the public square, and positive for those being able to remain and stand against Establishment Clause challenges. And the reason I say this is when we look and add up the different concurring opinions and who joined what opinion, I think you really have six justices who are in a position to strongly critique the Lemon test, that test derived from the Lemon versus Kurtzman case, which really set forth three prongs for testing whether something violates the Establishment Clause. But this has often been used very subjectively, allowing judges to wipe and scrub away different religious displays, I would say, at odds with an originalist view of the First Amendment. So when you have six justices ready to take a stand critiquing that rather strongly, it stands when we're looking ahead, I realistically see a possibility that Lemon will be removed from, overturned at some point in the near future. You had portions of the majority opinion for the court that were joined by Justice Alito, who wrote that opinion for the court, Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Breyer, and Justice Kavanaugh, and then when you add in Justice Gorsuch and Thomas, who didn't join those portions, but we know would be favorable towards my assessment here, I think we have a really strong indication that moving ahead, this opinion really lays the groundwork for Lemon to fall. I made this point in a blog for SCOTUS Blog Symposium on the case that came out on a Friday. And there are other positive aspects too. This is only one of them. I think there are other indications where we can look with hope towards the future based on the court's reasoning in this case.
Well, that is encouraging. And, it just strikes me that our national motto is "In God We Trust." And that phrase is stamped on every piece of United States currency. We celebrate Thanksgiving as a national holiday. Every modern president ends all of their speeches with the phrase, "And God bless the United States of America." And here in Nebraska, as is common across the country, our state legislature begins every day with a prayer. So does this decision put an end or at least a pause to all of these challenges we see or when a nativity display goes up at Christmas?
I think it will not put an end to them, but it puts a dent in them. And this is very significant because while this ruling concerned a veterans memorial, as we know, atheist groups, activist groups, post any indicators of religion in the public square, go around constantly trying to make trouble for local communities who want to put up a religious display, have a meeting open with prayer, anything where there is religion in the public square, even touching on government activity, they raise a fuss, try to bring an Establishment Clause challenge. This case doesn't resolve those questions, so they're going to have to be resolved in the future, but it puts a dent in them because it builds on the strong cases and principles laid out in Marsh v. Chambers and Town of Greece v. Galloway, which both dealt with legislative prayer builds on the historical aspect of those decisions, in which the court said that when something's rooted in history, obviously present at the founding of our country, it can't really violate the Establishment Clause. So by building on those decisions, we lay the groundwork for a principle that might govern all of the Establishment Clause, although in this case, we have the legislative prayer kind of subset of decisions that haven't really filtered into other areas of Establishment Clause law. But you know, I think we're looking ahead rather encouraged by this decision, and it puts a dent in some of these challenges, which, by the way, you know, we often hear the claim that this is all about promoting Christianity. An originalist view of the Establishment Clause, which allows public religious displays in local communities, goes for all faiths. And the court noted that, citing to Native American displays in Statuary Hall in Congress, a Native American Veterans Memorial in D.C., it permits communities to put up displays of any faith. So it's a fair principle. It's a fair principle that says all religion in the public square can exist consistent with the Establishment Clause, and this is the right view constitutionally when you look at that document as an originalist. So we're looking ahead encouraged by these notes from the court, and to hope they coagulate into a principle governing broader areas of Establishment Clause law in the future.
You know, I think that's a really important point because I think you're right on that. You know, really our founders envisioned a public square where Americans of all faiths and those with no faith would be free to express their beliefs and not be pushed out of the public square or forced or coerced by the government to adhere to one particular set of beliefs. But a public square that is sanitized of religion isn't a neutral public square. And it seems, I think, to many people that removing this memorial would have been overtly hostile towards religion and specifically Christianity. But as you pointed out, this victory isn't just for Christianity. This is a victory for all people of various faith or no faith at all. Is that fair to say?
It's fair to say, and it's an important point to note because we constantly hear how this is all about promoting Christianity. Anyone really examining these principles and noting that they could be used by people of other faiths has to admit that it's a neutral principle. And we have to continue to emphasize this point because people want to overlook it, they want to distort it, and fail to see how this is actually good for minority faiths. And my colleague Alexandra McPhee was with Family Research Council during a portion of last year, which she authored an article in the Federal Society Review making this point. We have to emphasize this. At the same time, as Christians, we can make our voice heard in articulating why a broad-based Christian ethic was integral to the founding of our country, leading to freedom of religion for all people. And all religions need that freedom to breathe in the public square, in the marketplace of ideas. We need to reinvigorate this notion and point out that it's an originalist notion. We're not looking to force one faith on others. We're also not looking to scrub the public square of all references of faith. So I think that the way ahead is positive out of this case, and we're grateful for all those involved in the case. First Liberty Institute representing the American Legion, defending the cross. Many others filed amicus briefs. We wanted to highlight in our brief how communities naturally manifest religion along the lines of how we've been discussing, and how that also manifests itself in the military, which was an aspect of this case as it concerns veterans commemoration. So we think there are many people who are dealing with this issue, and we hope the work continues to move us to a place where we're celebrating the role of religion in the public square as originalists, looking at the First Amendment, how these principles play out in America.
And Travis, before I let you go, I want to ask you one final question, because we hear this phrase often, and I think it's incredibly misused and misunderstood, and that is the separation of church and state. And of course, the critics are saying that this violates the separation of church and state or undermines it. Why is that just fundamentally not true?
Because the notion of separation of church and state was never meant to be a scrubbing of everything religious from the public square, which is how its proponents use it today. It was meant to be that the government would not force people to adhere to a belief, a certain set of beliefs, and go around using the power of government to make sure that people believe along those lines. And so it's just being being misunderstood, misapplied, misused today by people who throw that phrase around. I agree that government should not be coercing and forcing people to adhere to a set of beliefs. That's perfectly consistent with an originalist understanding of the Establishment Clause, which meant that the government would not set up and say, we are an Anglican nation or a Catholic nation or a Jehovah's Witness nation, and everyone must agree with that. The government must let people believe as they wish, but at the same time, that means that religion is in a public square. When someone enters public office, serves the public, serves in the government, they don't have to remove religion from everything they say and stop exercising their faith, which is integral to how they view their government service itself. And yet that's often the way that proponents of this notion go around saying it should be applied. So we must vigorously push back against that, fight for a public square for those of all faiths in a number of respects.
That's a really important message to get out there, so I appreciate that. Travis, thank you again. This is such an important issue, and I really appreciate your analysis and breaking down this decision for us and what it means for religious liberty. Travis Weber, Vice President for Policy and Director of the Center for Religious Liberty at Family Research Council, doing really important work. And thank you again, Travis, for joining us on the program. It's been a real pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
And if you want more information and resources on this issue and how you can get involved in protecting religious freedom, be sure to visit our website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. And this leads me to the next thing that we want to talk about today. This is a story that broke earlier this week. New reports are coming out on the continued increased persecution of Christians in China who are now fleeing the country amid an escalating crackdown and persecution on the Christian church and religious minorities in China. According to Fox News reporter Caleb Park, as China continues its crackdown on religion, Christians in the communist country are fleeing for their lives. China's ruling Communist Party has carried out a widespread crackdown on all religious institutions in recent years, including bulldozing churches and mosques, barring children from Buddhist religious studies, and incarcerating more than a million members of Islamic ethnic minorities in what have been termed re-education centers. China's president has ordered that all religions must, quote, synthesize to ensure they are loyal to the officially atheistic party or face the wrath of the communist regime. China's government requires that Protestants worship only in churches recognized and regulated by the officially sanctioned Three Self Patriotic Movement, although many more are part of independent congregations. The persecution of Christians in China is nothing new. A report by the watchdog group Freedom House found that Christians and other religious groups in China have been persecuted severely since 2012. A third of all religious believers in China who belong to a faith group were also found to face high to very high levels of persecution, which ranges from bureaucratic harassment and economic exploitation to harsh prison terms and even violence. But experts and activists are now saying the Chinese government is waging the most severe suppression of Christianity in the country since religious freedoms were granted by the Chinese Constitution in 1982. This is another sobering reminder of the importance of religious freedom and the need to continue to keep our brothers and sisters in China in our prayers as they face severe persecution because of their faith. That is something we all can be doing, and you can also consider partnering with international religious freedom organizations such as Freedom House, Alliance Defending Freedom, and Open Doors USA, who are doing great work to serve the persecuted church. There was another international story that made headlines this week, this time north of the border in Canada, where movie theaters are canceling screenings of the groundbreaking film Unplanned, which tells the real-life true story of a former Planned Parenthood abortion clinic director turned pro-life advocate due to death threats from pro-abortion advocates. Due to safety concerns, two movie theaters in Canada have canceled showings of the movie Unplanned. The precautions had to be taken after theater owners received death threats. LifeSite News reports that the cinema owners contacted police after receiving threats they perceived as real, causing them to be fearful for their lives and their families. This is just the latest in a string of obstacles that this film has had to overcome, including an R rating by the Motion Picture Association of America and having its ads banned on major television channels and social media platforms. CBN News previously reported Abby Johnson, who is the real-life inspiration behind the film, which is also a book, saying, quote, "I hope this film will be a really powerful tool that people can use moving forward to show the truth of abortion and show also the powerful, redemptive nature of Christ." Abby Johnson's compelling story has opened up the hearts and minds of thousands of people who have seen the movie and sparked a national conversation and really just terrific growing optimism and momentum for the pro-life movement. And despite the many setbacks and attempts to silence this film and Abby Johnson's story, word is continuing to spread. And now you will have the opportunity to meet Abby and hear her remarkable life story in person at the Nebraska Family Alliance 2019 Gala. We are having Abby in Omaha. She will be the keynote speaker on August 27th at the Nebraska Family Alliance Gala, and you won't want to miss it. It's going to be such a fantastic evening. Abby has become a national superstar for the pro-life movement, and this is going to be something that we hope many, many people will be a part of, because it really is going to be a celebration of life, and it'll be just an incredible opportunity to get to hear from Abby in person and learn more about her story, as well as what you can do to become more involved in helping to continue to advance the cause for life. Again, this will be August 27th at the Embassy Suites in La Vista. To purchase tickets or learn more about this event, visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. The media really continues to be intensely interested in Abby's story, as well as her continued efforts to advocate for the unborn and help clinic workers escape the abortion industry through her ministry, Until There Were None. She is frequently requested as a guest on Fox News and a variety of other shows, and of course is the author of the best-selling book and movie adaptation, Unplanned. And whether you've read the book or seen the film or haven't seen it yet, you won't want to miss this, and we would be thrilled to have you there. Come hear Abby Johnson in person and support the mission of Nebraska Family Alliance to advance family, freedom, and life by influencing policy, mobilizing prayer, and empowering people so that marriages and families thrive, life is cherished and protected, and religious liberty is affirmed and celebrated. Because whether policies are written by your local school board, signed by your mayor, crafted by your state representative, or passed by Congress, public policies affect you and your family, and Nebraska Family Alliance is honored to be the longest-standing pro-life, pro-family nonprofit organization with a daily presence at the state capitol, fighting for biblical and family values every day. Representing a diverse statewide network of thousands of individuals, families, and faith leaders, and we'd love for you to be part of the movement to restore the foundation of our nation, the family. That's all the time we have for this week. I'm your host, Nate Groz, Policy Director for Nebraska Family Alliance, hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.